Oh, people can see us now.
Hey.
I forgot to put the thing up. Anyway. Hey, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to our show. Welcome to the Artist Blueprint. As you can tell, our show has become very casual. We're just having some good times here. And yeah, we're just having good times. Please join us. We will be right back. All righty. Thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in. I usually have a little promo here that I put up on the page, but it didn't percolate this time around. So, George, how are you?
Man, I am fantastic. And got to hydrate to be great.
is that on your t-shirt?
It could be a great t-shirt, by the way.
It would be, yeah. Let me get
Ooh,
this.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Boy, did you see all that wrestling stuff that's going on now with the Rock and
I saw Raw last week, Monday Night Raw, but WrestleMania was this past weekend.
Right, that's what that's when the Rock came out.
Yeah, he came out, but he's been kind of doing stuff prior to that. But yeah.
Oh, he has. I didn't know
that. Yeah, they have to kind of promote it to lead up to WrestleMania and all that stuff. So, wow. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of it's funny to see him do that, but then it's almost like okay now. Because, you know, in the old days, if you saw like Hulk Hogan speaking with his normal voice.
Right.
When I first heard him talking like, yo, you know, I think it's, I was like, what happened to Hulk? Yeah. That's not him. You know, it kind of messes you up mentally.
It's very true. Very
you
true.
Know, but now with The Rock, you know, he's such a personality and such a huge star. Now he comes back and he just falls right in. And everyone is okay with it. Everyone is buys it.
Well, the good thing is also for him is that he's in the same exact shape when he left. So he's, you know, he can do that because
he's exactly
you know,
right. That's a good point. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah, can't come back after you retire. You're like, hey!
He got a big giant beer belly.
All he got is his eyebrows. Alrighty, well, today we're going to be discussing a subject that is near and dear to my heart.
Star Trek.
Star Trek and coffee. We're going to talk about, I hate using the word haters because it's so overplayed, but it's really, you know, dealing with criticism, handling criticism. You know, objections, shifts, you know, people trying to shift your viewpoint in a way that you don't want it to be shifted.
Right.
We were just talking about that before we went live about, you know, a book that I wrote that someone was kind of, you know, a while ago, trying to shift it into some place that I didn't want it to go and was not very nice about it. And I just, you know, that kind of thing. So we're going to talk about that and how to handle that. I've dealt a lot with that. George has dealt a lot with that, especially now in the space that George lives in, is health and wellness and fitness and stuff. There's a lot of stuff in there that people are like, you should be shot on sight, mister. You know.
And that was just my wife.
Right. And my wife, she keeps telling me, why do you talk to him? Don't you know what he does? I don't even know what that means. So I think part of it is, you know, we want to also, a lot of this show is awesome to help us, you know, I mean, it is like almost like for us,
right.
You know, not in a fully selfish way, but in a way it's for us because we enjoy kind of, being able to communicate our thoughts and then being able to share those thoughts, especially things that we've been through that we've overcame.
That's it.
That we can actually impart that I know will help others. Right. And that to me is very important to both of us. So before we get started, we do have a sponsor that we want to actually give some amol to. So I'm going to turn it over to Jorge and he's going to take it away. Go, George.
Thank you, sir. Well, the Artist Blueprint is brought to you by Wellness Resources, a family-owned and operated nutritional supplement company providing the highest quality clinically formulated supplements since 1985. Holy cow, that's a long time. So you can check them out at myvitaminresource.com. They have amazing supplements. You know, lots of people around the world order from them. And because you are our viewers and listeners, if you enter the promo code ARTISTBLUEPRINT at checkout, you will get free shipping on your order. But you don't forget, on top of that, they have a monthly special. Every month, they have a fantastic monthly special. And for this month, you can get 25% off their weight management supplements and their leptin weight management program. For those of you who are looking to lose weight, remember, it's summer's coming, right? The beach is, you know, people. A lot of people go to the beach. They want to get that beach body. So this is a great way to do it with their weight loss supplements. It's 25% off all their weight loss supplements in April. So check it out. It's Wellness Resources at MyVitaminResource.com.
All right. So we're the hater blockers, building resistance against criticism. That's us. We don't really get, like, we're not really that upset about it. Nah. Haters are quite entertaining and sometimes pretty sad, some of the stuff. But, you know, I think as an artist, you're in the business of being judged, right? We've talked about this in the past. It's like, well, you know, what else, what other business that you can think of? I mean, all, you're judged in everything, basically, right? But this business is the one that is a show business, right? And you have to show something of it in entertainment. You have to make people want to continue watching. Mm-hmm. And that is a very scary place to be, you know. By the way, I always wear a hat, and I was going to wear my hat today, but it's kind of warm in the house today.
Here too.
Yeah, so I just decided not to wear a hat because I'm like, I don't want to, so you can see my bald head. So along with the criticism as an artist, there's different types, right? There's, you know, and I wrote down some stuff here, right? There's the covert, right? You know, and, you know, covert is like, yeah, you're doing great. He goes, oh my God, he's so bad. You know, that kind of stuff. And they'll go around telling people like, yeah, he's not. Thinks he's good, so don't say anything, you know, just kind of support him, but he's not good, you know, that kind of stuff. And I've heard people say that to me about someone else, and who knows, they're saying it about me too. But you know, I've heard that, and I was like, well, you know, and I usually because I've worked on a lot of film sets. Sometimes it could be a lot of people on a film set, you know. I mean, it'd be 100 people on there, so you're going to run into people that are either they've been jaded.
Yeah,
they've been beat down and they're so upset that they want to take it out on people, or they're just generally not nice people, right? So that's that one kind of covert. Anyway, before I even get started with my list, George, you know, give me your takes on. You were telling me recently that you were somebody wrote something about you.
Well, I mean, people have wrote stuff about that. Yeah, I've gotten that many times, but somebody. On again, the social media wrote something about me being arrested for stuff that I do. I'm trying to figure out what that is exactly that I should be arrested for. But it's interesting because, you know, in my life, I've developed over the years such a thick skin, and for many reasons. And you know, where it's just like, really. But one thing, you know, I talked to John about this, is that, you know, I say to myself, because my show, you know, my show is, you know, growing pretty well. It's doing pretty well in the, you know, just in the overall grand scheme of things. And I say, well, I know that I'm actually now I'm making some waves, right? I'm making some waves because it's that whole thing of, you know, what Aristotle says it best, I think, right? It's something to the effect of, if you don't want any criticism, be nothing, do nothing, or say nothing.
Correct.
You know, so if you don't want to be criticized, you know, you can't handle it or whatever, then don't do anything. Just stay home and do absolutely nothing. But if you really want to be out there, you're going to have to deal with that stuff. It's just it's just the way it is. Yeah. So it's interesting. But the covert one that you mentioned, and again, I know you'll go through each one of them, is very interesting, because you do get that, you know, you do. Sometimes you can get that in your own family.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Especially, you know, especially people that maybe have an idea for what they think you should be doing. And you don't have that same idea. So they're like, you know, oh, yeah, okay, great, good. Now, you know, now go get a job, you know, and it's that whole thing. So,
yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the covert part of it, I think, is also more spread wide in a way, you know, like more people talk, you know, if you get someone that's really is in a dark place, basically, right? Yeah. They're dark, you know, they're really not living. Hey, Ray, how are you? I'm doing I have another show going.
He's doing two shows.
Over here too. Hey, I'm on live Australia TV here. So, you know, one of the things about the covert is that because social media has made it okay for people to kind of like put their two cents in, they sometimes, I think, forget, because, you know, some of these people that are haters are not necessarily the sharpest tool in the shed.
Right.
They will bring that to the outside world thinking, you know, and I've seen it before, you know, and they'll say things and I think they almost catch themselves like, oh, wait, I don't have a screen in front of me, or I don't have that shield where I can just put the phone away and be like, ha, 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 I just hated on somebody and then left, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that, you know, that's becoming more obvious now. There's a lot of support in the world, you know, and let me just, all this stuff that we're talking about hate, let me first say that there is more support for other human beings than there is hate.
Sure.
I know that we are looking at the media and we're looking at news and we're looking at, you know, mainstream media posting just, well, what are they posting? It's just, everything is hate. Yeah. One thing hates another thing. That's what they post. Well, this thing hates this thing. We're on this side and we hate this thing.
Right.
We're on this side and we hate this thing. And that's what you're getting every day, 24/7. That's pretty much the diet of the media, right? But when you're out in the world, when you're actually out meeting artists and you're in clubs and you're actually meeting a ton of people and you're watching stories that are happening across the world, you really realize that there is a lot more love in the world than hate. The problem is that for some reason, and I know the reason, but there are more people that are trying to destroy, you know, there are some people that are trying to destroy, and they have power. They have control. They have control of the media. So the narrative that gets put out is whatever the narrative is going to best serve them. Right. So I want to, you know, preface this whole conversation with that, because I don't want it to be like, oh, we're just talking about haters and getting rid of haters. No, no, no. A hater is a sad human being. Usually they live a really dark life. They don't have a lot going for them. That's part of the main problem. Like, you can get a hater and give him something to do that's exciting to him, and I bet you that person will turn around and become a lover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, not a lover. I'm married, but become like someone that would just love everything because they're living their dream or they're living their purpose or something ignited in them, you know. Yeah. But when they're lost, you know, when they're lost and they see someone else really filling other voids of other people, you know, really projecting their art, really loving every moment of what they're doing, you know, there's something in them that just like, oh, I hate that. I wish I had that. And because I don't have that, I don't want them to think that they have that. Right. So I'm going to make them think that they don't have that because I can't get that. And I'm afraid that they're going to find me. They're going to find out that I'm not really what I say I am.
Right.
So I want to bring them down here because if they go up there, I can't see them.
Yes.
I can't reach them. You know, I need to keep them where I can have control of them. And that's a suppressive person. We've talked about that on the show in the past. But that's a covert, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about criticism, right? Let's just use the word criticism. And then there people say, well, you know, there's always constructive criticism. Well, that could be a double-edged sword. You know what I mean? Because what does that mean? That's a term that's put out there also. That's just a nonsense term that was created probably by some mental studies of some sort, some whatever. Because constructive criticism is almost an oxymoron in the sense. If it's a criticism, in the sense, it's not really advice. It's not really help. It's not really support. It's not really suggestions, right? It's saying criticism, critique, saying like, this is, you know, just some constructive criticism here. I think that this would look better if it was there and that and that and that, you know, I think that that would be better, you know, or that's one way. And that people might listen to that and be like, well, that seems fine.
Right.
What's wrong with that? Right. You know, nothing wrong with that. But it'll come much better from someone that's not really giving, that doesn't even say constructive criticism. Mm-hmm. He goes, wow, I really love what you did here. You know, I was thinking also, have you thought about this angle? You know, if you did something like this also, because that might be actually kind of interesting, maybe for something. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I'm just saying, because I really love what you're doing here. So now you're giving love to the art. You're respecting it. You're not, you know, but you're also saying, you're also, if you wanted to say that, right. You know, it, there's also the fact that you don't have to say anything. You could say, oh, wow, that's really cool. I really like that. What did you like about it? I like how this flowed and I like how that flowed. Now, if they ask you, why didn't you like about it? You say, well, I didn't like this part and I didn't like that part. But if they're not asking you, right? Like if I send you my film and I say, hey, can you mind watch my film? And you come back and you say, yeah, I really didn't get it. Mm-hmm. Well, I asked for it.
Right.
Right? Sure. I asked for it. And I'll be like, oh, okay, well, you're stupid. And you're way wrong. But you know what I mean? And that's how I handle it now, right? I would have to handle it better, right? I mean, and I handle it fine because I've had people tell me that they don't like my work, which is not a big deal. But, you know, my point on that is that if it doesn't need to be said, if you feel like the work can stand alone and the person is happy with it,
right?
You know, that's the number, that's the bottom line, right? And if you're happy with it, you're happy with it, you know? So that's an angle that you can take as well. What are your thoughts?
Well, I guess it depends what it is also. Because, right, I mean, if you look at art in general, right, everybody has a different opinion about any type of art, whether it's music or
beauty of art.
The beauty of art, right? Everybody has, you know, two people could look at the same thing and one can love it, and one can hate it, not understand it, right? Exactly. Now, it doesn't make the, you know, one person necessarily right or wrong. It's just that's their interpretation of what they're seeing, you know? Now, I do believe that I don't want to, and you're right, the constructive criticism, I don't really... I like the term either, but I do believe that someone can look at your work and say, like, I had somebody, for example, and again, I don't really pay attention to much of this stuff at all, but you know, every now and then you get comments here or there. And I made a comment about certain minerals or whatever on one of my videos, and
you bastard.
And one guy commented, and he said, I think you're wrong. He said, I think you're wrong. I think, and you're wrong. And because of this, and he said what it was. Now, he didn't go into a whole thing. It was just like a sentence,
yeah.
You know? And I was like, okay, all right. And that's another way of looking at it, right? Now, I'm not, you know, because I have heard, now what he's saying, I have heard other people say that. Now, right. I may not necessarily agree with it, but it's another perspective. So right. In that case, you know, I may respond, you know, if I do respond every once in a blue moon, I may say, okay, yes, but, you know, take a look at this, you know, and I have done that here and there on a somebody who thought differently. But there's a way of approaching. Now, I don't think like the way you said it, as far as people approaching it and saying, hey, I love your thing, but, right? I don't think a lot of people have the awareness to do that. I think people are so stuck on you're wrong. That's it. It's either black and white, you're wrong. You know, they don't look at what you're doing right and maybe you can fix it or maybe this is my opinion on this. It's like you said, it's you're either on that side or this side because I think society is kind of, like you said, painting it into this way or this way. So even if you have a valid argument, it doesn't matter, you're wrong.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's... Also, they're a little apprehensive on how they would communicate something. And it's also a compulsion. Like, why do you have to say anything anyway? You know what I mean? Like, I've seen hundreds of films of people that I know. You know, I've been doing it 15 years and a lot of festivals, and I've gone to a lot of bunch of stuff.
Right.
A lot of them are woo, you know, they're pretty rough.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I say congratulations. Great right. job.
Right.
Congratulations. Great job. You know, for me, it's like, do you know how hard it is to put a film together?
No, I can imagine.
You know, it's way harder than any, you know, I mean, for me anyway, you know, it's hard because you have a script, you got to cast it, then you got to shoot it, then you right. got to edit it, then you got to have movies, then you have to film festivals, you have to have music, you know, all that stuff. And it takes a tremendous amount of work. So the fact that somebody could actually get together, you know what I mean? You know, I think that to me, get a film together and put it in, that's a great job. So I say great job.
Sure.
You know, great job. Now, sure. you can get into a conversation, a deeper conversation with a filmmaker, and they can say, well, what did you think about this? Like I had, we had one of our guests, right? Tommy Burke,
mm-hmm.
that was kind enough to come on our show. He's going to be coming back again to our show, and he wrote a book. Give a little plug here. Not just sunglasses and autographs, right? Now, he spent 30 years in the business, in the film industry, and he was on our show. Yeah. And boy, I tell you, he was so nice. He asked if he wanted to see my film.
Right.
And, you know, people sometimes say they want to see your film, and they'll watch it, you know, but I don't hear back or anything. But he wrote back. He said, hey, why don't we get on a call? And we did a call like this, a virtual call, and he went through my film. But not only did he go through my film, he had me play it.
Mm.
We were both on the screen and I played it. It was a short film, so it was it's about 15 minutes. I played it and he said, okay, stop it for a second. He goes, okay, see, I like what you did there. If you had, now think about this as a suggestion when you're moving the character into this. Man, I was like, what a freaking awesome thing to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't take that at all negative.
Absolutely not.
It was like he took time out to watch my film and then to talk to me about it. And there was some stuff he said. He goes, wow, I really like that. I really like what you did there, you know, on that angle and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, that was, he doesn't have to say that either. He doesn't have to say any of this.
True.
You know what I mean? So that to me is really where it's at, you know, that's where it's at. And so that's the difference.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody says, yeah, let me check out your film. And, you know, and then they just want to, and I've had in the past, when I first started, there was a guy who will remain nameless because I think I'm still connected to him and it's on some social platforms. But anyway, he called me up and he wanted to talk about film stuff. And I was just talking myself. And I was sort of, I had one or two films that I wrote and shot, right? And you know, that's all I had. I was in front of the camera more than I was behind the camera. Now it's reverse, right? And so he was such a jerk.
Really?
He was such a jerk to me on the phone. And he was, and later I found out that he didn't do anything. He didn't, you know, at the time I thought he was a film guy.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk to him, you know, and he wanted to talk to me. But it turned out that he just really wanted to tear me down.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted to tear me down. And my approach to that, and we're going to go into like what to do in a second. But this, in this instance, what I did was, let me find out who this guy is.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I just thought that for him to like say, yeah, you know, you're wasting your time doing these kinds of films. There's no money in this. You're not going to get discovered this way. You're not going to be able to, you know, it's like, and the storylines are really weak. You know, I mean, he went all in.
Okay.
And, you know, again, you know how I am. I'm pretty, it does flow off me. You know, I grew up having to survive, basically.
Right.
So for me, it was sort of like, but I was kind of thinking like, wow, I know he's not right, but I'm curious to see why he said what he said and
mm-hmm.
who he is. And as I was researching him, and it quickly became apparent that he's just someone that just cannot do it on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees someone that is doing it.
Right.
And wanted to just bring them down because he just doesn't want them to, you know, he started way before me. I think he started 15 years before I even picked up a camera,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I've had films in festivals and have, you know, I've had really good success in that area. And I think that was probably, that was with those two first films, you know, I think that was probably why he wanted to have that conversation. So you can take the responsibility on your own. You can take what the person said and then be like, where's that coming from? Like if Steven Spielberg, you know, or Scorsese wanted to talk to me and they said, John, you just don't got it. First of all, they would never do that.
Right.
You know, I've seen enough interviews with these guys. Mm-hmm. They are super positive about filmmaking and they love the process. They would not say that. But if they said, you know, what you need to do is maybe look at this angle, take this approach, switch up this thing,
right?
You know, these, you know, and give me that kind of stuff. I don't have to research them.
Of course.
I don't have to know what their background is. But if some Joe Schmo is telling you, and this is what I'm advising to y'all. If some Joe Schmo is like giving you some grief or some crap about your work and stuff, what are they doing?
Right.
Check out their stuff.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? What are they doing? You know, right. And I've said this to people who said stuff to me, and I said, what did I say? I can't remember. I'll remember later. But I said something where it was a really good line to them, and they were like, I can't remember. Damn. But I'll remember it. But, you know, you can defend your art is my biggest advice. You know, defend yourself as an artist because you're the artist, not them. Right. And if you did not ask them for advice, that's the, you know, that's just on them that, you know, that's their weakness. They can't hold back on that. You know, it's just an unfortunate thing. And I also wanted to mention one more thing, that the little comments, little digs, you know, that is suppressive. Yes. That is clear hate. You know, I've had people tell me that, you know, oh, well, don't quit your day job. Right. You know, I've had people say, hey, I saw the Grammys. I didn't see you on there. You know, that kind of thing, you know, and I always have a comeback because I'm a smart ass and I always have a pretty quick comeback for things like that. You know, one person was a scientist or whatever. And I said, oh, really? I didn't see you. I didn't see any Pulitzer Prizes for you. And he was like, touche. You know, and it's sort of like it still happened. You know what I mean? Like he still wanted to go there. I could have not said anything and just taken it like, and feel like I'm a failure or something, you know, but I'm not built that way, you know, and I'd love for others to be able to do that as well.
Agree. And, you know, the comments, you know, again, it's unfortunately, and this is where, you know, we go back to, and John, you and I have had this conversation as well, it's probably no bigger place right now than the social medias.
Oh, man. Okay.
Because it's a breeding ground for that. You know,
definitely.
And the good thing is that, you know, for them, for those folks, because they can hide behind it, they can hide behind their,
that's exactly what makes it,
you know, the Twitters of the world and the, you know, and the Instagrams of the world, these people can hide. They don't have to interact with you. They can just make their comment and run away. That's, you know, that's the power that they have. And again, you have to look at yourself and say, okay, am I going to read this? Am I going to read into this? And, or am I going to respond to it? Am I going to, you know, because I guarantee you, the bigger you get, the more you're going to get. You're not going to sit there and respond to all these people, you know,
right.
It's just, it's a waste of time. And, you know, and it's, you know, it's that type of thing. And this is where you have to really, especially social media, again, this is where you really have to put your armored suit on if you're going to be on there for any length of time. Because you're going to get that. You know, the comments that I've gotten, they haven't been emailed to me. Okay. They haven't gone on my website says big giant contact page. There's my email addresses on it. They don't go there. They don't give me a paragraph of what they think I'm doing.
Well, they're lazy.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It takes time to do that.
That's their biggest flaw.
It takes time to do that. And then also they expose more of themselves now.
Yeah, 100%.
Right, when they do that, instead of going behind their little thing and saying that, you know. So, you know, on that end, you know, you really have to understand that there's going to be people on those platforms that do that because that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that, you know, what we were saying about focusing on the source of where it's
right.
Consider the source of the criticism, you know, I mean, if it's coming from someone you respect and you trust, you know, then you can look at it and be like, oh, okay, well, I do. Absolutely. Or is it coming from someone who doesn't hold any weight? You right. know, so you have to learn how to look at those things and be able to make an effective decision
right
on the spot. You know, this is where yeah. it becomes, you know, a little nerve-wracking, because, you know, especially when you start getting a lot of it.
Yes.
You know, at some point you have to then realize that you're creating an impact.
Right.
You know, you're creating an impact, and the impact is so powerful that you're going to get haters. As a matter of fact, you want some. You know, you want to be able to create, you want to be able to shake things up. You want people to be like, "Oh, I don't agree with that." You know, and I'm like, "All right, that's awesome. Good. Let's have a conversation. Let's right. do this." You know.
Right. Right.
But that's a big thing. The second thing that we're only on to is the coming from a place of love. You ever heard that?
Mm-hmm.
Say things mm-hmm. like that. Well, look, this is coming from a place of love. I'm only saying this because I love you. I'm only saying this because I care about you. I'm only saying this because I really want the best for you.
Right.
You know, that is very dangerous as well, because what comes right after that is usually the dream killer.
Right.
You know, the goal killer, the purpose killer, whatever you want to call it. And that usually 99.999%, that's family.
Yeah.
It's family.
Yeah.
The people that are closest to you are the ones that are going to tell you some of the most hurtful things, because they want you to do well. They think they want you to do well, but what they really are saying, and not all of them, I shouldn't say all of them, you know, I have supportive people in my family. But what they're really trying to say is that, please don't get any better than me. Don't become more famous than me, or even don't become famous. I'm not famous at all. Now that I'm not famous, well, you can't be famous. Well, you can't do that. Only these people do that. That's not for us.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing, right? And it's a middle class mentality of, you go to college, you get married, you buy the house, you get the car, mm-hmm. you work for 40 years, you retire, you move right. to Florida, you die, right? That's right. that's the cycle that was built purposely, mm-hmm. by the way.
Yes.
This was not by accident. This was not God that gave us a 40-hour work week. This was done for a very purposeful reason. They need right. workers to get their agendas moving. They need companies moving, you know, and it's true, because I mean, if I have people, like when I was working in New Jersey with my production company, I would get interns.
Yeah.
But my goal was to make those interns leave knowing something.
Yeah.
Leave wanting to come back and work, you right. know, for paid gigs. And, you know, and giving them, what do you want? That's one of the first things I say. What do you want to achieve by this?
Mm-hmm.
Not what I want from you. What can I give you?
Right.
Right. That was how I approached it. So the 40-hour work week and this whole cycle of how people are working and the treadmill that we're on, you know, it's all a trap, number one. And, you know, wanting a house, wanting a car, wanting a family, that's not the trap. That's fine. You can have all those things. But when it's demanded and it's on this cycle, and if you decide to like move in a different direction or you move a little bit differently, that's where things kind of like, wait, what are you, you know, what, like when I moved to Nashville, I was like, what are you moving to Nashville? Like, wait, what do you, well, how, I don't know, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you move mm-hmm. to Nashville? Because we want to move to Nashville. It doesn't need to make sense to you.
Right.
It makes sense to us. Right. You know what I mean? And we want to move. And we've been here for 2.5 years and it's been incredible. You know? So you have to really, really be, you have to be very, very careful. You have to be very, very aware. And it's your responsibility. It's your job to make sure that whatever hits your lines, whatever hits your space, that makes you feel not that good, that you look at it and say, well, where did that come from? Is that a place of love? It's not, because I don't feel good. You know, we all know we have emotion. We feel, you know, use your emotions, use your innate abilities to feel something. And when you don't feel good, man, look at it and be like, why don't I feel good? Oh, you know, he said this to me, or she made a comment about, about this, and suddenly I don't feel too good.
Right.
You know?
Now, I think there is, well, it depends on also who it is. Okay. And this is why I say this, because you have to look at this, like you said, look at the source. Now, when Uncle John or Uncle Bill or whoever it is says it, you know, yeah, you could see that. But what if Mom and Dad say it? You know what I'm saying? Now, here's the other piece of that I would say. Okay. Because Mom and Dad, or either one of them, they could be trapped in that, like you, that 9-to-5 mentality, right? If you don't grow up in a house full of artists that understand what art is and what you need to do go about it, it's a challenge right off the bat, because, you know, and we've talked about it before, that art is looked upon as not the noble thing to do, right? Especially when you come from a family of 9-to-5ers. So, you know, now, does that mean that Mom or Dad are jealous of you, or they, no, they are, they are coming from a good place. What they're trying to say, in my view, is they don't want to see you struggle. They don't, in their eyes, art means struggle, right? Means, oh my God, my daughter's going to be living in his car. And, you know, and they don't want to see that, right? Because you really, hopefully you're supposed to technically do better than your parents, right? That's what we want. You and I are parents, John, right? We want our kids to do way better than we did. Okay. Mm-hmm. And yes, as a parent now, I don't want to see my kids struggle. Okay. Right. However, I will support whatever she does, you know, but do I want her to make a living at it? Absolutely. Do I want to see my kid in her car struggling and not being able to eat? No, of course I don't want to see that. I want her to do it. Now, again, I will support her and help her as much as I can. But the difference is that I would never discourage her. Like, if my daughter says tomorrow, Dad, I want to be a drummer. Dad, I want to be, I'd be like, here's the drum set. Let's do it. Let's go. Right. Because I understand that.
Right.
But the parents that come from that other way of thinking don't understand that. They'll never understand that, because they don't have that within them, right? Maybe somebody in the family was an artist and they weren't, you know, so they have that gift of art. So in my view, it is coming from a good place. They just don't have the awareness of what their kid can accomplish, and or, you know, they may be trying to steer their kid in another direction where they could eventually could be a huge, right? I'm sure all those artists that are out there that are huge, at one time they were young kids, and some of their parents were like, what is this kid doing, right? And now, but now they're not complaining when their kid's playing Madison Square Garden.
Correct. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it's also, you know, a lot of the, like, the, we'll call them 9-to-5ers, I guess, I mean, whatever, but you're out of line, you know, you're not in the line, you're not in,
right. You're not going with the,
the normal, exactly. The norms, right. You know, and that is confuses them.
It does. Yeah.
And it also upsets some of them, you know, right. Like family, close family, you know, parents, I think are more, coming from a place where you just said, you know, it's like, they just don't want to see their kids struggle. You know, correct. They really love them.
Correct.
If they really love them, they would support them and try to figure out a way for them to do what they want to do so they don't struggle.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was saying. Right.
Yeah. So it's like, what do you want to do? Okay. I want to do this. Okay, fine. My daughter is 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter got very interested in nails, whatever you call that, nail technician.
Mm-hmm.
And cosmetology, I think that's about space.
Right.
No. It's about
Carl Sagan doing nails.
The nails have to be in length. And nobody knows who the hell that guy is.
I know, right?
So here's the thing. You know, she told me she was interested in that, and I said, okay, you know, gave her a little nail thing, and she just started doing it on her own and stuff. And then she started getting good at it. Right. And I was like, oh, okay. So she really was telling me, Dad, I really want to do this. And my niece, Anna, who lives in Florida, is a nail technician. That's what she does.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of teamed them up. I said, okay, well, if you really want to do that, talk to, you know, talk to your cousin, my niece, and she'll help you and guide you and maybe give you some stuff that maybe can help you and give you some of the products that you need and so forth. So, you know, my viewpoint was like, I don't know anything about that industry. You know what I mean? I do know having, you know, about a little bit about makeup, hair and makeup from film. Right. And there was always a hair and makeup person would come in and they have a big trunk. They open it up like this big thing. They got all their stuff. They got their chair. They got their brushes, you know, and they get paid for the day and they make pretty good money, you know, if you can get the work, right? So I know about that part of it. But I, because she was so interested in it, I noticed it and I saw, okay, she's not, it's a thing. I have to start doing something. So I went out and I bought her all the stuff that Anna, my niece, told her to buy, you know, and it wasn't cheap. We got her all that stuff. And then I went to a thrift store and I bought a desk that she can set up stuff. You know, I bought her a desk, got her two chairs. So whoever she's doing nails for and stuff. And she's done nails for people that come in now. Now friends come in, they do. She does her nails. She does her own nails. She does great work. She's getting so freaking good.
Nice.
Like just really unbelievable, you know. And it was because I don't know if that's going to be her career, but that's what she's doing now and that's what she's interested in. And I want to give her that encouragement and that support in that area. You know,
right. Absolutely.
So I think, you know, that's for parents, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, getting out of line, you know, as an artist, it's just who we are. We weren't born in line.
Correct.
You know what I mean? We were never in that line. So we don't, when people say, well, you know, and they don't say it with these words, they don't say get in line. But when they say, well, what are you doing? You know, I mean, get a job, you know, and you know, whatever. And this is not to say to be an artist to starve. You know, I just saw something with Rick Rubin the other day and I follow him a lot. He's awesome. And he said something that was like, you know, don't starve. Don't use the art to starve. Find a way. You know, he says maybe, well, I'm paraphrasing, but he said maybe your job is just your job.
Right.
And then when you're done, the remaining hours that you have left, you focus on your purpose.
Exactly.
Your purposes, you know.
Exactly.
This way you can have stability.
Yes.
Because he also said, and this was a very good point, which I never thought of it until he said it. But he said, if you go out and you say, okay, I'm just going to go out and I don't care if I starve, I'm just going to go out and do it. It changes your art. It changes you as an artist because now you're creating from a place of struggle. You're creating from a place of
desperate, right?
Desperation.
Yeah. Yes.
So it changes you as an artist. It changes you as a comedian, an actor, a musician. It's going to change the songs you write. It's going to do all that. So it's not going to, you're writing from a place of desperation, like you said.
Right.
But if you have a 9-to-5, you know, and you, but you're doing it because that is your job.
Right.
And when you get off at 5 o'clock, now, you know, you get home at whatever time you get home, 5:45, right? 45 minutes to get home at 6 PM. To 10 p.m., you're living your purpose.
That's it.
You know, and that is 4 times 5. That's 20 hours a week. You have the weekend or whatever days you have off. You know, that's a lot of time to be able to put into your passion. But you have to be disciplined.
Yes. You know?
And one of the things that a hater can do is can really drain you.
Yeah.
It can drain you. You can feel like you don't want to do it, but there's part of you that's like, why am I not doing this? I should be doing this right now, and I'm not. Why? I have the time because you have something in your environment that's sucking the energy and the life out of you. You have to be able to spot that. If you don't, you will not succeed. I guarantee.
You know? Yeah, you and the art, you know, like you said about the artist as far as fitting. Artists don't fit in. Artists by nature don't fit in.
This is why they inspire people, though.
Correct. This is the creative process. Artists create and they don't fit in because, again, yeah, I mean, you could say, okay, I'm in my job and maybe I create something in my job, but really in totality, what you're doing is you're creating something for someone else.
Right.
You're not creating for yourself. Okay. In, you know, and again, I'm not saying that having a job is a terrible thing. It's not. What I'm saying is that, like you're saying, have the job to survive, right? To make the income or whatever, so you don't get into that situation where you're in the car. Yeah.
Okay? And it relieves you.
Correct. You don't have that burden. Exactly.
You have money. You can eat. You can wear clothes that you want to buy. You can go on trips.
Absolutely. Because you still have to, you know, you still have to survive in society. You still have to survive.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you have to survive. It's just, you're... And, you know, even to buy a piece of equipment, even, you know, if your guitar gets messed up or your drums get messed up or something, you need money to get a new one in order to continue to create strings. Cable. Right.
Exactly. Yeah, you need a lot of drumsticks.
But when you feel the tough part about it is, and I see it in my own life, when I don't play, I feel the constant tugging at me.
Yeah, yeah.
Of that I should be playing right now.
Yes.
You know, it's a constant. I had this talk with my wife and my, you know, I said, have you ever felt something that was constantly tugging at you that you have to do or you will die? She said, no. I said, well, then you will never understand how it is to be an artist.
No.
Because this is who I am and this is who you married. And this is, you know, and you have to understand that there are times that whether it's a podcast or music or whatever it is, I have to create. This is just a part of me.
Yeah, it's in the DNA. It's who we are as beings. It's our spiritually. That's who we are, and that's what it is. You know, you're not to be dramatic, but I mean, I don't even think this is an understatement. It is an understatement. You do die a little bit.
Yeah,
when you're not doing it.
Yes,
you're dying a little bit because spiritually, mentally, physically, you can do it. And you're not.
Right.
You know, and the one thing that haters love the most is when you're not.
Correct.
They love it. They love when you say, I don't want to do this anymore. They're like, yeah, it's too hard out there. I've had people say that. You know, it's like, because I had someone, and when I went to New York in June for a film festival, I was talking to somebody and I said to them how hard this was. And they said, oh, so you work like, they don't track. Mm-hmm. It's almost like talking to an alien, like someone else, right. Not from the planet. But, you know, he asked me, oh, so do you do like 40 hours or is it more than 40 hours a week? I was like, 40 hours? Like, I didn't even understand. I was like, 40 hours? I was like, no, man, I do like 100 hours. More than that. He goes, yeah, man, but what? It's really? So you don't got like no time off? And I was like, I don't know what that means. Like, you know, but you get like time off, you get a couple of weeks off so you can go on vacation, you know, just not tracking. I said, when you're doing the kind of stuff that I do, you do not think about those things.
Yeah.
I'm just creating stuff. I'm putting it out. Some of it goes good. Some of it goes bad. Some of it goes nowhere. Some of it goes far. That's what I do. And I make money. You know, I do work. I'm a media person. You know, it's still in the industry that I like, you know, so I'm working in that industry. I do consulting for companies on social media. I do posts, social media, actually, a couple of platforms I get paid for posting. That is the business, you know, so you have to move away from that conversation, or at least, you know, and this is something that I, as I got more in serious into being an artist, I started having the conversations with people when they ask me stuff in my head prematurely. Mm-hmm. So I know how to answer.
Right.
You know, so like if someone says, you know, man, how do you do all that? I mean, you know, like, yeah, it's fun.
Right.
It's something that's fun for me. I don't consider it. So I say that.
Right.
It's hard to argue with, like, well, it's fun.
Exactly.
You know, that kind of stuff. Do you make money? Yeah, that's another question you get asked.
Yes,
I do make money at that. You know, it took a long time to make a dime, you know, but I do make a dime, you know. And so it's okay to sit down and with your own thoughts and your own creation and think to yourself, okay, how am I going to respond when people ask me these kinds of things, you know? Yep. okay, if they say this, I'm going to say that. If they say this, I'm going to say that. If they say this, do it. Do it. You know, I mean, we are in show business. You know what I mean? And give them a show.
Yep.
Give them a show. You know what I mean? They want to get all whatever, you know. The last one here is just the one that we kind of talked about. It's kind of like straight hate, you know. It's pretty obvious, you know. I had once someone say to me, this was somebody that you know. We can talk about him now because we're disconnected from them. Some guy named Matt, he was a bass player. He wasn't a very good bass player, but he played with us, and we fired him. I fired him, actually. I was the one that fired him. But we played with him, and he was the most rudest guy. And I went to his house to lay down some tracks, and he just was like, I played something, and he was like, what are you doing? Like just that alone, you know what I mean? Like, it's different coming from George and I. George and I, we kid around that way all the time, and then we laugh. Our relationship is a brother relationship, right? We grew up together. But somebody who I don't really know that well, he's like, what are you doing? And he wasn't saying it like to be funny either. He was saying it seriously. He was like, what are you doing? I was like, what do you mean? I was like, I'm playing what you said. And right there when I said, I'm playing what you said, I was already feeling like, okay, this guy is done. This guy, we are done. And then he left me in a little studio, which was connected to a dining room. Mm. And he was like, all right, you lay down that track. I'm going to have dinner with his wife and kid. And he went to the dining room, and I'm seeing them having dinner. And I'm just laying down. I'm going back and just laying down this guitar part. And I packed up myself. I was like, all right, man. And I called you up, and I was just like, yeah, he's done. He's out. And then we called him up, and he was upset about it and all that. I was like, yeah, I don't have to, you know, I don't have to explain myself. You're just not a nice person. But I've always been that way. I disconnect from people that are just not nice. That's just been a thing for me. I've always been that way. You know, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why I was able to get out of the environment that I was in and do the things that I've done and I'm doing. It's because I have that ability, you know, innately, I guess.
No, you 100%. You know, you've had that ability way before I did, and you've had that understanding just in general way before I did. And it's interesting because when I look at myself, and you know me, we were kids, you know, I never, when I was, you know, 16, 17, 18, we started playing and all this, rejection or criticism for me was like, you know, a big deal, right? It was like, holy cow, you know, oh my God, am I, you know, whatever. And, you know, because again, I wasn't used to it, and I didn't have a thick skin at that time. Now, you know, a couple of things gave, you know, obviously time does it, and playing music does it, getting rejection even in music does it, right?
You do get it, and, you know, even ripping from friends, you know, close people.
Exactly.
Strengthens your character. But, you know, your character.
But I could tell you one thing for me, and this is just a personal thing for me, and if anybody ever wants to learn about rejection, when I got into marketing and sales,
oh man,
and John, you know this, right? I was in a company for a few years doing marketing and sales. I had to make phone calls. I had to sell. I had to go, you know, sometimes door to door, meet people and all this. The rejection, I got hung up on so many times. I would call 100 people, and I, you know, maybe 5 or 10 of them I would get, you know, and sell. The rest of them, you know, would curse me out, hang up on me. You want to develop a thick skin.
Oh man.
Holy cow. That is one of the, now it scared me to death when I did it. Now I made money doing it, which was kind of cool. It was a good business and all this and blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, I made like, I think it was like at the time 350 sales in a short period of time because I busted my butt doing it. But one of the things that whole thing gave me was the ability to handle that. Once I left doing that, it was a different ball game. I was a different person. It changed me. Yeah, it changed me as a person. There's actually people that have talked about it that have said, you ever want to develop a thick skin and go into sales, it'll change your life.
Yeah,
and it did. It changed my life. And from that point forward, I was, everything I did musically and even to this day, I'm a different person. Yeah. And I can handle the criticism. I can handle people saying stuff. And I'm like, are you kidding me? the things that I've been through and if people have said to me and whatever, you ain't even going to affect me too, you know, not even one hair in my head.
Right. I did sales too for many years as well. And yeah, the rejection is just, you know, it's just brutal. You know, when you first get it, you know, you kind of feel like you get that rush of blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your head gets hot. Your ears get hot.
And you doubt yourself.
You get sweaty. You doubt yourself. The next phone call you make, you really suck even worse.
Yeah.
And then you're shaking and then you're like, gotta step back.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta step back and try to figure out what it was. You know, I mean, I think, you know, you have to seek perspective on what it is that just happened. You know what I mean? You know, you gotta be like, okay, what exactly just occurred?
Yeah.
You know, and go back, because it can be, criticism can overwhelm you.
Yes.
You get overwhelmed, you start doubting yourself, but you have to take a step back, get perspective from friends, you know, the business that you were in and business that I was in for sales, you know, you have other people doing it as well.
Yeah.
Some of them are trusted friends and mentors and colleagues, and you can actually use them for support.
Exactly.
And they can help you navigate through some of the criticisms and you can see things through a different angle.
Yep.
You know, so it's important to really get out there and get a sales gig, you know, but it's important to make sure that when the shit hits the fan, for you to step back, be like, okay, what did I do there? You know, okay, maybe it wasn't me. Well, it's always me. Okay, right. Hold on. It's always me. Maybe my tone was not right. Maybe I was too, you know, there's a whole science to sales. You know what I mean? It's a whole science to it. So you can't, you know, if you're like this guy, hey, how you doing? My name is, you know, maybe you're way too excited for the person on the other line. You gotta be quick. You know, if you're like, hi, this is John calling from, you know, from Artist Blueprint Sales, you know,
right.
And then somebody picks up and they're like, hi, how are you? Well, you better start matching them.
That's right.
You know, they're like, yeah, how you doing? Hi, yeah, my name is John. I'm calling from the Artist Blueprint. I'm just calling, you know, and if they're like, hey, how you doing? I'm doing great. Thanks for calling. Yeah, I appreciate you taking the call. I just wanted to talk to you for, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got to be quick. You got to match them. It's the same thing in any kind of say, in anything. You're in show business, we're selling ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, we're selling ourselves. We're selling our art. We're selling our skills that we've worked on for years to try to get good enough to try to become a professional in the thing. And when you become a professional in the thing, you now have to go out and sell yourself. And there's other professionals out there that are just as good and some even a billion times better. And that can discourage you.
Correct.
You go out there, I'm in Nashville, for Christ's sakes. You know, like my guitar playing is my guitar playing. Yeah. I love how I play because I play with what's in my head.
Yeah.
The melodies that are in my head. But there are guys here that are freaking phenomenal. I'm talking about guys that nobody's heard of that will get up on Broadway here in Nashville and be incredible on the guitar. You know, that can be discouraging. It's not discouraging to me. It's inspiring to me. You know what I mean? But for somebody coming in, you have to be able to look at that and be like, you know, wow. Either you're saying, I either want to play more and get better, or I want to be I'm inspired by their playing, or something in that realm.
I saw Steve Smith this weekend, boy. Did
you see the drum set?
I was pretty much ready to sell my drum set, but no, inspiring, absolutely. But
incredible.
One thing I want to just mention also that I was thinking about when we were talking about this, and it just kind of, you know, I thought about it. One thing that this generation has, artists, just people in general, content creators, they have, among many things, but one thing that you and I didn't have when we were coming up, and that is the ability to get instant validation.
Right.
So they can get it, let's say social media, YouTube, or whatever it is, right? So you post your content, you post your song, you post whatever it is, boom. I got 27 likes. People love it, right? So now the dopamine, now everything is like, oh my God, this is great, you know, whatever. And then this is where, right now, if you get a criticism and that, you know, of course they focus, you know, a lot of the people will focus on the criticism. Now you and me, back in those days when there was no social media, there was no internet, right? There was no instant anything. We had to, I mean, we had to fight, you know, tooth and nail to get our content out, to find out where we're going to get at, to play the gigs, to see how many people get the gigs. Maybe we get some validation in the gigs. Oh yeah, you guys did a good job. Maybe the right person sees it or no, but it was a constant fight. Okay. So you and me kind of understand that whole concept. Like we have the best of both worlds because we lived in that era, but we also live in this area. Right. Era, right? And we kind of understand both things. But now young artists growing up in these days, especially the 20-year-olds, they grew up in this.
And yeah, my kids, you know, my daughter, she doesn't know life without social media.
Exactly. Which in turn also you have instant validation, but you also have instant criticism.
Right.
You know, so you get the good, but you also get the bad right away. And this is
a double-edged sword.
So you have to also as an artist understand that, you know, you have that instant thing. And this is the I would say now the artists out there, whoever's trying to create has to have an even thicker skin than we did.
Oh yeah.
Because of all the stuff that's out there now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, everyone is a little celebrity now.
Right. Exactly.
Automatically, you know, we've talked about this in the past where, you know, you post something and 30 people like it. Well, people say, oh, only 30 people? Only 30 people. This is how far removed we are from the reality of what we're doing here in right. social media.
Exactly.
Where I'm thinking, can you imagine, like I've said this before, you know, if you say something or you do something and 30 people walk into your house right at that moment, mm-hmm. 30 people in your house is a nice little crowd for you to be like validating you.
That's right.
You know, so we have to look at, again, it's perspective, you know, yeah. You got to look at it that way because, you know, the millions and, you know, there's so many different platforms. There are people that buy their, you know, people that have seen people with 100,000 followers and you're like, you don't have anybody following you. You know, it's like you just paid some for those things and now it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it's such an addiction to wanting that validation.
Exactly.
You know? And that's the part of it that's really damaging, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it goes hand in hand with like, you know, being an artist now, because if you're an artist in 2024 and you don't have these pages or, you know, optimized doing some work for you, it's really, I mean, I just saw an agency and they, on their forms that for this thing that we're doing, I had to fill out some forms. And on the forms were all social media platforms. They want all of them.
Mm-hmm.
It was things like a Pinterest, like,
yeah.
Like, you know, things that I'm like Pinterest. I was like, wow, they wanted every single social media platform because right. they want to get a full picture of what right. you do and who right. you are and what your content is like and all that. And so it is something that you need as an artist, but just know that when you are on there, that you are going to be hit.
That's right.
You will be hit. I guarantee it. And it's not the worst thing in the world.
No.
You know, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's actually okay. Yeah. You want to create an impact. You know, I'm in a band right now. And we talk a lot about the purple cow. Yeah. I've said it before.
And you called Adele a purple cow, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the expression came out and it is a thing.
Right.
And, you can Google it. It's purple cow. And people like Adele, Michael Jackson, Prince, who actually is a purple cow, right? Or was. All these artists, if you see them, there's something very different about them, very unique about them, you know? And they're called, the term a purple cow is somebody that just excels in something but also is different.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people that can excel in the thing, like here in Nashville they're great guitar players, but are they a purple cow? Not so much. They fit into the crowd. They're the herd. They're all brown cows with white spots and they all kind of go in the right. same in yeah. the same direction, you know. They're great guitar players though.
Yeah.
Now you get a guy like Eddie Van Halen. Right. Well, let's look at the guitar players that were purple cows, right? Out of all the guitar players that we know, right? I could name three of them that were Purple Cows.
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimi Hendrix, and Eddie Van Halen. Those three. Now, there's a guy named Mancuso who just came out. He's 26 years old. He's ridiculous. He's doing something that I've never seen before. He's like a Purple Cow, right? Mm-hmm. So, but those three guys are Purple Cow. Now, are there great guitar players through there? Yeah, they're phenomenal. Eric Clapton is a great guitar player. Is he a Purple Cow? He's a great guitar player. He's one of the best guitar players of all time, right? But he came up at a time when doing what he did was incredible.
True.
But even he got together with Pete Townshend, and they saw Jimi Hendrix live, and they were like, holy crap.
Right.
What is happening right now? This is not right. They saw the Purple Cow because it was something completely uniquely different,
right.
You know? So when you're out there, if you're a Purple Cow and you're somebody is going to tell you not to do that. Somebody will tell you. I guarantee you somebody will tell you not to do that. Do not behave that. Matter of fact, Brian Regan is a stand-up comedian, one of my favorite comedians. And when he first went on stage, he's a guy who kind of moves around like this a lot. You know, he's like, hey, and he moves across the stage. He's older now. He still does it, but not as much. But back then, he would move around like crazy, and he would go back and forth on the stage. A guy told him, he was like, hey, man, you're moving back and forth like that. That's distracting, man. You should not try to stay in one place, you know. And he was like, oh, maybe I should, I don't know, maybe I should, you know. He was young at the time, you know, but he said, no, I'm going to just do what I do. And he couldn't really even help himself, you know. And now he's one of the biggest comedians of all time. So, you know, stand-up comedians, you know, are the same thing. Purple Cow. You know, name me Purple Cows in comedy.
Dorothy Perez says Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry is a Purple Cow. He's a Purple Cow. Now he came up. Yeah, I would say he's definitely in that league. So you're right. You're right. I'll say four of them because he is one of those guys that there's nobody like a Chuck Berry. There's nobody like Chuck Berry. You know, like the Beatles as a group are Purple Cows.
Yes.
Individually, not as a group, definitely. Elvis Presley is a Purple Cow.
Yes.
You know, Michael Jackson is a Purple Cow. Prince is a Purple Cow. You know, Chuck Berry definitely is a Purple Cow. What was I just saying? I was saying something
about being. Well, you mentioned Brian Regan, how he was, you know.
So I was saying comedians, right?
Comedians, yeah.
He talks about this. George Carlin talks about this.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes.
George Carlin talks about how he was. There's an interview on YouTube you can see.
Yep.
We're going over our hour there. So this is the new norm. But, you know, George Carlin talks about how he wanted to be the television guy. He wanted to be the Danny Kaye. He wanted to be wholesome on television doing humor. He had done probably 200 TV spots before he went away, and he talks about being in a sort of a weird place where he was sort of in the middle of, they were the hippies over here, and then there were these conservative mofos over here, and he kind of was like somewhere in between where he was sort of, and he was like, nah, I kind of like hanging out with these guys over here, the hippies, the rebels, the people that are fighting the system and stuff. I want to go there. And he said he did it. It took him 2 years. It wasn't overnight. It took him 2 years to go and refine what he was doing. And then he came out, no holds barred, and he became a sensation.
Yes.
With the 7 dirty words was one of the things. Everything. I mean, everything he did was just very in your face. And it was sometimes, some of it went, I wouldn't say political, but it went social.
Yeah.
You know, it went into social issues and stuff. And he was very funny. You know, he was very funny. So you got, you know, you have somebody who went and became a Purple Cow.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like a Robert Johnson, right? You know, people talk about Robert Johnson, the myth of Robert Johnson, where he went to the crossroads and went down to the crossroads, right? And apparently he sold his soul to the devil, and he, you know, and he came back after like a couple of years, and he was like, I know it was a year. He came back. He had disappeared and didn't know where he was. He came back and was like one of the most amazing guitar players. And, you know, now what did he do? He probably went off and just practiced for a year. George and I had that experience where we went
for
like 6 months. I think we just played every day for hours and hours and hours and hours together. And we were young and we were kids and we didn't have too much responsibility. And that's all we did. And we came back in 6 months and people were like, they were quiet.
Shocked.
The room was quiet when we played in front of some.
We went to another level where everybody in the room was like,
yeah,
what happened? You know?
Yeah. And it was very quickly, but that's all we did. We didn't sell our soul. We just played.
Yeah.
We just played a lot and practiced and really embraced the art, you know, for what it is, you know.
Yep.
But yes, okay, so this is gone all over the place, but again, we were really just talking about knowing who you are, staying focused, you know, and my points here that I had were, you know, again, we were talking about constructive, embrace criticism. And don't look at it so much as criticism, look at more like feedback.
Feedback, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Let's say that, right? Sorry.
By the way, I got drunk once and saw a purple cow.
Nice. I believe it. I mean, you know, it's part of the circle of life. Focus on the source of wherever the feedback is coming from. If it's something that really makes... It's somebody that you respect. Cool. Develop resilience. Resilience you can develop basically by knowing yourself more. There's a lot of self-help things that you can do. Try to stay away from medicating and try to stay away from alcohol and other forms of chemicals, stuff. You can eat right. You can take care of your body. You can drink a lot of water. You can take vitamin C and B1s and all that stuff and get your body right. You develop resilience because your mind is there. Your mind, now you feel better. Seek perspective, you know. So, you know, stand back a little bit and be like, whoa, what just happened there? Why do I feel like this? Let me go to some people that I trust and run this by them. You know, I have mentors. I have two mentors that have, for the last 15 years, changed my life. You know what I mean? They give me perspective. I have a call with them coming up, you know. What's the matter?
No, I was pointing me.
Oh, yeah. I was reading so I couldn't see you. I said mentors, not mentos. Somebody who eats too much candy. Learn and grow. I only learned.
You mastered one out of two.
I mastered one. So 50% on that. I'm still working on the growing part.
It's all right. I'm the other way around. So
yeah, you're the... He grew, didn't learn jack. And you have to also remember the last one here. You have to remember that if you choose this business, it's part of the game.
That's it.
It's part of the game.
At the end of the day.
Now, whatever it is, it's part of the game. It goes in, you know, it's part of it almost as much as anything else. You know what I mean? It's like you're going to go up in front of people and do something. And if it's 100 people there, you think 100 people are going to love it? Maybe they do, but... Generally, you'll have one or two that are going to be like, I didn't really care for it that much. It just happens. George and I have been to Rush concerts where there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people there specifically paying money to see this band. And as we're leaving, some people are like, yeah, man. Yeah, I don't think they nailed that song, though. I think they had problems with
it. That's so true. That
right?
So true.
So legit. You know? And meanwhile, George and I are leaving there like feeling almost... physically ill from that band's incredible power that we love so much, you know. So there's always going to be that, you know. Yeah. We just have to embrace it as artists. But I'm going to let everybody go now. Appreciate it. Thank you, Dorothy, for joining us. As always, we appreciate it. Share our show with people, with some of your friends, and let them know that we are here every Tuesday night. George and I have been trying to figure out where the show is going to go and the next evolution of the show and what time we're going to change the time. So just so y'all know that might be something that we may change the time of the show. We still don't know. We put out a poll a couple of weeks ago, which nobody responded to. So that says a lot about where the development of the show is.
Hey, Dorothy, if you're listening, what do you think? Okay, yeah. Should we change the time of the show or the day of the show? And
like we were thinking Sunday night, 7 o'clock. That's
Yeah, usually people are home Sundays, maybe, you know, more, you'll get more engagement. People are hanging out, relaxing.
I think we picked Tuesday. Yeah, football's over at that point. I think we picked Tuesday because we personally had things going on the weekends and stuff, and I couldn't do them on the weekends and stuff. And now I'm more available. So anyway, that's where we is in that, but on that spot. So, but yes, want to thank you all for tuning in. As always, we will see you again next week. We do have some guests that we are rescheduling because I had a little, I was a little MIA with a little body thing that I've taken care of. But I am back, no pun intended. I am building back better.
I was waiting for that one.
So, but thank you everybody for tuning in. We love you. We appreciate you. And we will see you all again next week. Thank you. And for George and for me, take care. And as always, peace.